It's wonderful to be with you. It is really, really good. I know some of the family. There's a few faces that I've not met. I'm probably, where Aled knows about 85% of you, I probably know about 10 to 15% of you. So it's wonderful to be with you. I was just reflecting with somebody over coffee in terms of all the salt and light connections. So one of my team right now is in Nairobi, Kenya. I'm allowed to mention that country. Aled knows about it. I'm allowed to mention it. It's okay. And they're running a learning community with some Salt and Light churches in Kenya. So they start this week with a whole bunch of Salt and Light churches. So what Aled was talking about last night in terms of friendship and relationship, creating synergy, going into different parts of the globe, that's our story. That's not just Aled's story, that's our story. What I'm going to share with you today, we're going to base in Nehemiah. And I'm going to just look at the first two or three chapters of Nehemiah, just really briefly, and just set, I suppose, the scene for us as we think around movement. What does movement look like? What do we need for it? What are some of the conditions, the frameworks? What does it mean? It's such a grand word, isn't it? Such a grand word, such a big word. It's honestly such a now word. 5, 10, 15 years ago, it would have been networks or whatever it is. Now everyone wants to be a movement, start a movement, spark a movement. It's the new and latest buzzword. What I want to do in Nehemiah is just look for four simple keys. And what encouraged me as I was listening to Aled last night, what encouraged me as I was listening to Deborah this morning, is you're going to hear a lot of the same stuff. I leaned to Ben last night and said, Aled's about 40% of the way through my talk already. It's great. And then hearing Deborah this morning. So my hope is that you begin to get that messaging. And as I was saying to Aled, none of this is staged. So the brief that I got from Aled, and it will not surprise you, was this. Be yourself, share your heart. Watertight, strong. And who knows? It's like, there you go. There's the vista. And what's encouraging for me is what God stirred and placed on my heart was super similar to what he'd spoken to Aled. And what he's put on my heart would be really similar to what we heard from Deborah. And the thing that I would say is that this is a God thing. This isn't a salt and light thing. This isn't a synergy thing. God is doing a new thing, not just in this room, but in his body. There's something going on, something stirring. And honestly, I think that's from both the challenges that we face and the growing vision that we have. Both are true. There's a growing sense of what we have isn't or is no longer fit for purpose. What we see around us, what we're putting our energy into, what we're building or managing or maintaining, just isn't getting the job done. But also there's a stirring. There's a sort of seed planted, an embryo of us, of something good and great and new and kingdom. No longer parochial, no longer badge or building, but actually body of Christ and kingdom. And that's what you get to play your part in it. You have a unique grace and gift to give to what God is doing. So what I would encourage you in is, as Aled said last night, everyone has a part to play. A ministry, usually and most often, is based around the work and the network and the leadership and the competency and capacity of a leader or a couple or a team or a church or a place. That's a network or a ministry. A movement goes beyond one person or one church or one organization's capacity to lead, to manage, to organize, and sometimes to control. A movement has the energy at the edge, not the center. A movement is actually reproducing itself from the edge rather than being pushed and managed and added to from the center. And so what we were saying last night as we were praying for the time that we're having together is praying for and stepping into movement takes courage. I think of my three wonderful kids, 10, 8, 12. Different personalities, different struggles, different gifts, growing in who they are. And there is both just a huge joy in me of what is ahead for them. But the reality is this, those of you that have the joy and the challenge of parenting will know, it isn't all unicorns and rainbows. It isn't all beautiful successes. Let me just tell you how wonderful my kids are. Because the minute you start that story, you turn around and one of them's punched the other. It's like, let me just tell you, oh, sorry, wait there. Hold that thought. I'll come back and tell you how great they are when I've taken them off each other. It'll be fine. The joy and the challenge that you are praying for is real. There is something that God has that is wonderful and resurrection and breakthrough in kingdom. But the reality is no mountaintop, no greener pasture is reached unless and without a journey through the valley. So as we pray for movement, we need to not be idealistic or unrealistic in our prayers. This is both an inspirational moment for you as a community. It's also and should also be a sobering moment for you without wanting to ruin the party too early in the process. There's actually cost as well as prize that we are embracing. So that being said, I would love you just to open up your Bibles. We're going to start just at the start of Nehemiah. So a story 2,500 approximately years ago, written around BC 426, charting Nehemiah's journey that kicked off around BC 446. And I'm going to just give you just a little potted history of it. Lots of you will know it. I don't need to follow through too much. You have this cupbearer to the king who hears the stories of Jerusalem, the broken down walls, the priesthood is gone, the people are in disrepair, and the walls are in disrepair. There's struggle and strife. He's impacted by it, goes before the king, is permissioned to go off on this great journey, disappears and meanders his way through, arrives in Jerusalem, and then this wonderful rebuilding project, this wonderful movement of God's people, rebuilding and restoring of the city walls. Wonderful imagery for us today as we think movement. But in that story, well, I want to pull four simple things out for us as we think about movement. The first piece for us is a broken heart. Because, and it's obvious to say, but important to say, for a movement, you have to be moved. For a movement to be birthed, you have to be moved. Movements start in here, in your heart, not in your head. Movements start with being heartbroken, feeling the pain of your community, embracing the lack that is there present in the fabric of society. Deborah didn't start by thinking about how she can build a platform or a network or make a difference. It was God's spoken word and a heart that was broken. Jesus, the writers described him as being moved with compassion. Movements start in your guts. The direct translation of moved with compassion, that we do the English version and kind of neuter it and go moved with compassion. The direct translation was he had pain in his guts. His insides hurt as he looked at that crowd, sheep without shepherds. Let me ask you a question. When was the last time your guts ached for your community? When was the last time you were in pain over the loss and the lack, the struggle and the strife of the people in your community? Not just that it's a good idea, but that they need Jesus. Not just that you've got a plan and something that you can offer, but they need Jesus. A movement starts with being moved. Honestly, are you too busy to be moved? Have you got too much in your agenda with responsibilities at church to be moved? Are you running round like a headless chicken too fast to have the space to be moved? Are you courageous enough to allow God to break your heart. It's a dangerous place. We so often choose comfort. We have an insurance policy for everything, don't we? Just in case. A movement starts with being moved. Nehemiah's great, wonderful rebuilding story started with him being heartbroken. Tears, prayers, fasting. What would it look like for God to move you to action? What would it look like for you to open your heart to God? We know that Nehemiah's pain was real because it brought him to a sense and a place of doing something about it. The challenge for us is so much, and we mentioned it even last night, so much of our news feels that it's at a distance. And we have a sort of a compassion or a sympathy, but we never really cross that bridge into empathy. We never really put ourselves close enough to actually feel the pain, that it actually impacts us rather than just another. We, as the church, are called to be those that not only love the broken from a distance, but journey with the broken through to healing. Not just, I believe in healing, I am a vessel of that grace to those that are broken. How close are you to those that are broken in your community? Is there a safety buffer? Is there an insurance policy? For movement to happen, it's birthed in a heart, not a head. It's you being moved that begins movement. We know for Nehemiah, he came before the king at great risk to himself. Likely, if he'd have upset the king, he could have lost his head, lost his life, lost his job, done. Movement, the second piece that we need for movement, is that you have to move. You have to move. What we look at in Nehemiah is a repurposed life. Same old, doesn't get the job done, does it? You are perfectly designed to get the results that you are achieving. If nothing changes in your system, you will get the same results. It's insanity to expect anything different. If you set your course and you build your systems and you put yourself on that course, that's where you'll get to. What would it look like for you to be more aware or activated in the place you are? For Nehemiah, it included a job change and a city change. Now, there'll be some of you in this audience that God may stir over this week to move to a different geographic location. God may do that. Move may actually mean move to go and start or go and partner or go and plan. There may be some people in the audience that God calls to move jobs or move a portion of your time. I've been doing this and I need to do this. I've been investing here and I need to go partner over here. But it may not be job or geography that changes. It may just be the move is being more aware and more activated where you actually are already. What would it look like for you to use what you have, where you have, the relationships that you have to bring about kingdom change? Nehemiah used his position as cupbearer to the king to come before the king, to share his pain of Jerusalem, to seek permission from a permission giver, to get resource, bit of wood, safe travel, and he set off. Now, the reality is this. The distance from where Nehemiah was to where he got to, and I wrote it down, it's 875 miles. So Nehemiah went from John O'Groats to Land's End. That's how far he went. The equivalent of traveled the distance of the tip to the bottom of this great isle. That's how far he went. It would have taken him about 2.5 months. 2.5 months. So you go from job security, cupbearer to the king is a pretty good job. Happy with that? Job security, good pension, I'm fine, we're good. Probably good perks. 2.5 months to go to a place that is completely barren and broken down. 2.5 months. Now, just stay with me in that space. 2.5 months, 875 miles. 2.5 months. It took him 52 days to get the project done. It took him longer to get there than it did for him to get the job done. So for any of you in the audience that are waiting somewhere between where you were and the land and the vision that God's called you to, you're in good company. You're in good company. Just think how many, I would imagine most days Nehemiah woke up and Deborah's comment of the Holy Spirit's logic and our logic don't always line up. I imagine every morning he woke up and went, what the flipping heck am I doing? What am I doing? What am I doing? And again, if you're in a chair going, what am I doing? This is what God's placed before me, but the distance between my now and God's picture is huge. You're in good company. You're in good company. Because honestly, my contention would be movement is a byproduct of obedience. Movement is just a byproduct. It's what other people use to remark on what God is doing in and through you. It's you being faithful to the call and others go, wow, that was started there and then it's become this and then it's become this and then it's become that. It's just a describing term for obedience. We so often measure leaders with success as achievement rather than obedience. What I would pray for all of you is that you are obedient to what God calls you to do and who God calls you to be. That's what we're looking for. So I want you just to take a moment. We're going to stop as we go through a little bit. Just take a moment, not long, about a minute. What are some of the pictures and visions and Jerusalem walls that God's placed on your heart that feel crazy? As Deborah said, feel illogical, feel beyond you. 2.5 months of journey, 875 miles. That's a long way. What has God placed in your heart that is beyond your capacity? What has God placed in your heart as a dream, however daft or silly, illogical beyond you? I'd love you just to close your eyes and be brave and just go back through the journals, the prayer times, the disappointments, the hopes. What's God placed in your heart that's been battered, bruised, rationalized, stolen, challenged? What are some of the dreams that God's placed in your heart that go beyond your capacity? A repurposed life. A movement starts with being moved with a broken heart. It continues with a repurposed life, moving somewhere. For Anna and I met my wife when she moved into our shared accommodation. I was doing the apprenticeship year in Sheffield in the church in St. Thomas's, and she'd just spent a year in India. And so she'd come back, she's a Sheffield girl, she'd come back literally just to do the paperwork and then disappear off to go to India. And I entered stage left, ruined that master plan. And we spent probably the first 4 or 5 years wrestling with in our marriage of saying, we feel this place that has defined Anna's faith is so rich for her. The certainty for her of going at some stage to be a missionary in India. And we went a couple of times. And the second time we went with the agenda to just seek God to say, are you calling us now to go and move to India? And you know when you go somewhere with an agendaed prayer, go, Lord, I'm just waiting for you to confirm what I think you should say that we should do. And I'm sure none of you have ever prayed those prayers. Lord, I'm just waiting. Yes, yes, really, really? And literally, I kid you not, we landed in Delhi, and back then, before the kind of Commonwealth Games and modernizing airports, it was just pandemonium. It was kind of 13, 14 years ago, just crazy. And literally, we came into the airport, and Anna turned to me and said, "It's not yet." She said, "God said, why wait to be a missionary?" And we spent 10 days in India with our friends and doing different ministry stuff and all that kind of stuff, reflecting on the fact that in our head, still having had all of this upbringing in this discipleship culture, all of this stuff, that our missionary was to go there and to do that. And God reaffirmed and called and reframed us to say, how are you a missionary to the city where you're planted? And so for 10 days, we said, well, what does it look like for us to be a missionary to Sheffield? Not a missionary to go somewhere else, but a missionary who lives and is embedded and entwined with the culture of the city that we're in. And so, as you do when you're kind of 26, 27, we basically just said, where's the poorest neighborhood in Sheffield? Let's move there. And we did. And so we came home and said, actually, we're going to move. We're going to move and we're going to go. And we basically 3 weeks, interesting, Deborah's pregnancy story, 3 weeks after we'd said, where's the poor? Where? We prayed and we said, we're going to go to live amongst the poor. Pick the poorest neighborhood in Sheffield. 3 weeks later, we found out we were pregnant with our first child. Now, I would love to say I would have made the same decision if I'd have made it 3-4 weeks later. I don't know. Yeah. Honestly, I think that was God's grace for us to say, we are totally committed. This is what God said. And we cast the vision, got everyone excited, tried to bring as many people as we can, because that makes you feel secure, doesn't it? If you've got more people, you're like, come on, come on, come with us. It's going to be amazing. And we managed to take 15 young adults and move on to this council estate. And we grew our team from 15 to 6 in 2 months. That's why I'm on the platform, people. That kind of growth. That kind of growth. That's like a lot of percentage up there in terms of growth. Because the reality was, we didn't do anyone any favors by casting a big vision. I played my full part in making a mess of it, trust me. But the reality was, those 6 that stayed were those that were already doing Kids Club on the estate with us. They already knew the culture, they knew the community, we knew the families. The other 9, honestly, were more in love with the idea than the reality of movement, of urban council estate incarnational mission. We talk in our training, the difference between a movement and a moment is your response to God. He doesn't change, you do. There'll be many, many, many moments that you have. What actually sustains, and there's a sense of longevity, and then scales, and there's a sense of breadth, is your response in those moments. Your faithfulness, your obedience. What does it look like for God over the next 36 hours to repurpose your life? To have a kingdom paradigm and a kingdom practice. Not just doing church, not just managing the stuff, not just being good, but actually being a seed that goes to the ground in your community that produces a huge kingdom harvest. How do you give of yourself for a kingdom win for your community? What does that look like? Because then the great thing is, God gets the glory, not you. This is a Jesus movement, not a Rich movement or an Allied movement or a Mark and Nesta movement. This is a Jesus movement. We need to be Jesus people. What does it look like to have a repurposed life? And on the other side, as we actually are moved internally, and we're moving externally. Linking to what Alid said last night, we are called to be a people on an adventurous journey, and we're called to be a united people. Just flip that through. Oh, that might have been me. Click. There we go. Perfect. What did Nehemiah do? Well, there's one thing that I don't like about Nehemiah. Just being honest, public confession, quite cathartic. So he's taken 2.5 months to get there. Yeah? That's a long time, especially in our quick fix, have it yesterday kind of culture. 2.5 months. And honestly, he got off lightly. Think Jesus, think Moses, think David. 2.5 months is actually not that bad, given the kind of company that he was in. He gets there, and this is what it says. I went to Jerusalem, verse 11, chapter 2. Just a small little, gave up my job, gave up my city, 2.5 months on the road, went to Jerusalem. Paraphrase. And after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few others. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. Now, my little extrovert, social media, public launch, tell everyone how excited it is, it just dies inside at that moment. 2.5 months, he's been given a God-given vision to rebuild the people, rebuild the walls. It's going to be awesome. 3 days he waits. And then he goes out at night with a few. And my conjecture would be that even on 2.5 years of 2.5 months of journey, as he gets to just the cusp of this vision, God's still not finished with him yet. There's still that internal work of character. He's being built before he begins to build others and build anything. There's that space that God is more interested in your character than your activity. He's not actually that bothered about how busy you are. He's bothered about whether you love him. And in that space, before Nehemiah steps even further onto the public stage, there's still that hiddenness. There's still that space. And he steps into the space of calling people. And again, this is something that I love about the synergy word. If you just listen to how then, once he finally communicates this vision, this is what he says, verse 17, chapter 2. So he's gathered all the sort of key leaders together. This is what he says. Then I said to them, you see the trouble we are in. Think of the communal language. You see, can you not see the trouble that we are in? This is not my vision. This is our problem. This is our opportunity. Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and we will no longer be in disgrace. They replied, let us start rebuilding. We're not looking for one man or one woman ministries. We're looking for a community that sparks movement. An adventurous journey. What does it look like for you to leave behind comfort and embrace risk? But what does it look like for you to do that with shoulder-to-shoulder others? Who's on the journey with you? We're not looking for heroes or geniuses with 1,000 helpers. We're looking for communities that build communities, families that build families. Because the reality is, what was Nehemiah's grand master plan for rebuilding the walls? Did he call in the experts? We'll call in a couple of builders. Get it all done. We'll drink the tea. You fix the walls. We'll be good. It was families and communities that built and rebuilt the portions of the walls. They built as family units. And I heard someone speak on this and I thought it was brilliant. Is They were building and rebuilding the wall outside their home, because then nobody could complain of the noise and the mess and all the stuff, because it was their noise and their mess. It's like somebody's doing roadworks outside my house. Oh, it's my road, it's my roadworks. You're done. You build your part of the city wall. What would it look like for us as a church, you as leaders, to empower and equip the family units, the community, and I say nuclear, not nuclear, extended family units, not just blood, your communities within your church. How can you help them to help others rebuild the fabric of your community? Not just do programs and offer things from a distance or once in a while on a Tuesday night, but actually live embedded in the community. Be good news rather than just every Thursday night share good news. That missional, incarnational impulse. Missional, sent, incarnational, deep. How do we go and stay? That was the modus operandi that Jesus gave the disciples in Luke 10. Go and stay. Find a place of peace, a person of peace, and actually stay with them. What Jesus didn't say, the gospel that Jesus didn't star in, Jesus didn't say, go, knock on as many doors as you can, try and get as many people as you can back to me, and I'll do a 15-minute gospel presentation. It'll be amazing. And to be honest, I imagine if anyone was going to do your gospel message at the end of a meeting, I'd have Jesus. Alan is good, I'd have Jesus. He didn't say that. He didn't say that. He said, go and stay. And he didn't even say, go and stay and cook for them, clean for them, share your apologetic with them. He said, go and stay and be served by them. Accept their hospitality. How busy as a church are we trying to be strong, or is actually so often the gospel is shown and proclaimed in our weakness and our partnership? We'll fix it. Honestly, 30, 40, 50 years ago, maybe. Now, we as a church can't fix it. We're coming to a point of actually needing partnership. And honestly, in many places, we need help. We're not the help, we need help. Let's be honest. Moment of honesty there. So how do we come into this place? An adventurous journey, but a united people. Why is it important? Well, linking to what Deborah shared this morning, actually, and again, we haven't talked about what we were going to share. Two things, one from Nehemiah and one from Peter. Why is it important? We're an adventurous journey and a united people. Well, what Nehemiah had, which is what we need, is a plan for opposition. What are you going to do when it doesn't work? What are you going to do when it doesn't work? The great Muhammad Ali said this: everyone has a plan until they're punched in the face. Everyone has a plan until they're punched in the face. Because the reality is this: this environment of faith and excitement and community and fellowship is just a moment that we gather to be sent again. Nehemiah had the plan. It's sword and brick, build and battle. And when there's one of the places struggling, we'll blow the horn, we'll gather together, and we'll gather around you. He had a plan when he was spoken against, when the plan was pushed back against. What's your plan to persevere? Because honestly, enthusiasm only gets you so far. What's your plan to persevere? How are you intentional about this process? So, we've heard from Luke 5 this morning. And Deborah is talking about the miraculous catch of fish. There are two miraculous catches of fish in the Bible. Luke 5, John 21. John 21, verse 3, is probably the most significant verse around movement killer that you'll ever get. John 21, verse 3, says this from the lips of that same Peter. Chapter 21, verse 3. Peter says this, I am going out to fish. I'm going out to fish. I'm going back to what I know. People under pressure always go back to what they know. Wow. I'm going out to fish. And we know the story, don't we? That same miraculous fish, the catch, the swim to the shore. And Jesus, I love Jesus. He's awesome. He comes and he reconnects with Peter. And he repurposes Peter. Reminds Peter of who he is in relationship. And actually sets him back on that course. Do you love me? Let's connect. Feed my lambs, feed my sheep. Remember who you are and what you're called to do. A united people, an adventurous journey. As you set off on this journey, the moment of that first miraculous catch that turns your life upside down, there will be moments where it doesn't work. There will be moments of struggle and strife where the logic and the part of your brain that tries to understand things just can't work it out, and circumstances screams and shouts in agreement with it. What are you going to do to remain a fisher of men rather than go back to being a fisherman? What are you going to do? How do you steward and hold the vision and tend to and cherish the vision that God's given you? Honestly, it's done in community. You cannot do this on your own. You cannot do this on your own. Even Jesus chose to journey with people and to work through people. And honestly, if you don't believe me, listen to Jesus. Look at the life of Jesus. He wasn't a lone ranger. If anyone could have been a one-man band, if anyone could have been a one-man show, it would have been Jesus. And he chose to walk with people, and he chose to work through people. He chose to walk with people, and he chose to work through people. So who's with you in and on this journey? Again, just take a moment, and what I'd love you to write down is three or four names of people who either you need to reconnect with or you need to connect with, who are on the journey with you. You just need to share, this is where I feel frustrated. This is where I'm tired. This is where the embers are starting to sort of fade. This is where the picture's going a little bit dull. This is where, honestly, I'm tempted to go sideways or give up or go back. What I'd love you to do is just write down three or four names. And it might be a simple text message. It might be phoning them. It might be finding them in the break to come back into the context of community. So again, just scribble them down, a couple of names. Who's on the journey with you? And what I'd love you to do now is just turn to the person next to you and just share one or two of those names. And honestly, if you don't have any of those names, then I would just love the person who's listening just to pray. We're called to ask, seek, knock, look for, listen for, pray for those things that we don't have. If you feel isolated at the moment, just get the other person to pray for you. Who are those names of the people? Just verbalizing them brings a level of intentionality and accountability. So turn to the person next year, 30 seconds, no longer. Who are those people that you're on the journey with? Go. Okay. Good. One more thought, and then I'm going to finish up and leave you. With just a couple of questions. So as we're thinking about movement, a broken heart, I challenge you and encourage you this week, over the course of this weekend, open yourself up. Open yourself up to allow God to break your heart again. Is it a people group? Is it a place? Is it a certain network within your city? Is it a region? What is it and where is it that God is breaking your heart? Be moved. Allow yourself to be moved. A repurposed life. What does it look like for you to move? To embrace change, risk, out of your comfort zone, into the zone of the unknown. What does it look like for you to reapportion and repurpose your money, your time, your effort, your leadership gift, your home, your job, whatever it be? What does it look like to repurpose it around a kingdom outcome? How do you again become the people of God, a united people on an adventurous journey? What does it look like? What is the adventurous journey that God has given you? A destination beyond your capacity, a kingdom vision beyond your competency. And who is with you on the journey? What is incredible for me is I love the verse where the disciples are described as everyday, uneducated men who'd been with Jesus. I love that. I love that. What does it look like for us to be normal, everyday disciples who do extraordinary, amazing things with God? You don't have to be more special. You don't have to be more educated. You don't have to be cleverer, smarter, higher capacity. Hear and obey. What is God saying to you? What are you doing about it? How are you embodying the word that he's giving you? The space, and I'm just going to put up a couple of the MDNA, the missional movement DNA pieces that we've been exploring over the last kind of 5, 6, 7 years with Alan Hirsch and others. The pieces we've reflected on movement, Chinese church, early church, Methodist movement, whatever it be, there are some key components that we've hit on today. I'm not going to go into them because I didn't want it to be a sort of tactical piece. I want this to be a space that you're exploring personally rather than cerebrally. I didn't want 6 topics that you go, I understand that and I like that and I don't understand that and what does that mean, all that stuff. So if you could just flick it on, or I'll flick it on. Is it going to flick? Oh, yeah, there we go. So some key components that mark movement. And over the past 20 years in a local church context in Sheffield, and over the last 10 years intentionally as what we've called 3DM, what we've sought to do is embody these principles and equip leaders and churches to take these on. And what I would say to you is these are our best guess and our best analysis of the skeleton of movement. And if you think of Ezekiel and the Valley of the Dry Bones, I'm not going to jump to it because I don't want to overrun. But if you think of the 3 component parts of the Valley of the Dry Bones, you've got the bones, you've got the skeleton, you've got the flesh that comes on it, you've got the skin, and you've got the breath of life that brings life into what was a skeleton, then a body, now a person. And here is what we're talking about as the skeleton. And what we've done in our training is say, this is the skeleton. These are the key principles that undergird what we do, what we see, what we desire, the skeleton. But the skin, the touch, the feel, the texture, is defined by the context. Because if you just have a skeleton and then try and put it as a system in every place, it's just a one-size-fits-all franchise model. This is what you should do. I don't know what you should do in your neighborhood because you live there. You know it. So the skeleton is the intentional principles. The skin is the contextualized practice. And honestly, Where would we be without the Spirit of God that breathes life into all that we do? So as you think about movement, I'd encourage you to think about these skeletal principles. Jesus is Lord. Our Christology should shape our missiology, that should shape our ecclesiology. Not the other way around. Not this is how we do church, how does Jesus fit in this box? But this is who Jesus is, how do we as a church reflect him? Discipleship and disciple making. Discipleship being the principle and disciple making being the practice. Sadly, so many of us have lost that art and the value of it. Apex culture, Ephesians 4, everybody gets to play. Everyone's gift is in play and at work for us to be fully healed, matured, perfected, some of the text talks about. MDNA? Oh, apostle, prophet, evangelist, shepherd, and teacher. So from Ephesians 4, 1 to 16, so the ministry that's given, gifted to the church for its, as it talks about, there's lots of different definitions. It talks about equipping, but it's also healing, perfecting. So it's a whole mix. The missional carnational impulse is missional, sent, as Alid was talking about last night in the vineyard, that sense of adventure and mission. Missio, sent, missile, going. Don't want one of them. And incarnation is deep. So we need to be a people that are both sent and a people that are deep. Not just sent and moving and disparate, but sent and embedded. Organic systems. The energy of a movement is on the edge, not the center. You don't manage or organize a movement. It's God at work. It replicates and reproduces at the edge, not the center. There's not a head office of movement. You don't have this kind of movement HQ. You've got lots of, you'll have centers and hubs, but the energy and activity is out there, not in here. And finally, communitas, liminality, talking about dislocation, the exile dynamic that honestly we can deny, but is our reality. That sense of a almost a risk headline that shapes community. So for that one, think Lord of the Rings, not friends in a coffee shop. It's not particularly helpful for our generation to go, we turn up and we just sit and drink coffee, sleep with each other, do nothing, versus here's my bow, here's my axe, here's my sword. This is beyond us. These are some of the skeletal principles of movement. But what is your context? What is your skin? I can't tell you what that is. And honestly, pray hard and pray often. As we look at the Methodist movement, the Chinese church, the early church, prayer. Prayer produces both passion and compassion. Passion without compassion is just a lively prayer meeting, which are brilliant. Don't always help change the world. Honestly, compassion without passion and prayer is just good works, which again are really good, but we have to combine the two. I want to leave you just, and I'm going to try one last time to make this thing work. Yes. Okay, personal victory. Managed to get it to work, the clicker. I'm going to leave you just with these questions. And again, just give a moment for you to reflect on them. Because honestly, the danger when we talk about catalyzing movements, when we talk about catalyzing communities, the danger is it sounds like this really big thing out there that somebody else does. Yeah? It's the big thing that Deborah does, or Rich gets to do occasionally, or Alid's going to do, or Mark and Esther do. It's this big thing out there for somebody else. The reality is you have a part to play. This movement doesn't happen without you moving. You playing your part. So just a couple of questions for you. Just to sit and just to settle into. What breaks your heart? That's the seed of movement. Right there being planted and implanted in you. Where's your holy discontent? Where does your heart ache? Where do you see the lack? The loss, the pain, the suffering. What breaks your heart or what lifts your spirits? Where does change need to come? Because honestly, if you see the problem, it's likely you're part of the solution. If you see the problem, it's likely that you're part of the solution. How do you embrace risk? Honestly, most Christians, in my opinion, are too dull. Honestly, they're just a bit dull, a bit beige. And I don't read the Gospels, and I don't love a Jesus that's beige. Like, there weren't many people that just wandered past Jesus going, oh well. They either wanted to coronate him or crucify him. There wasn't much apathy around in the interactions with Jesus. It wasn't like, oh, I'll go watch Netflix instead. Glass of red wine and Netflix. He's okay. There'll be another one along in a couple of hundred years. It'll be fine. How do you embrace risk? How do you step out of your comfort zone of same old, to actually step out in faith? Faith is a gap of something that you're sure of, but you don't yet see and understand and comprehend and can fix and manage. Where's the faith gap in your life? And finally, who's with you on the journey? Don't step out in isolation, step out in community. I'd love you just to take 2 minutes on your own, just to allow those questions to settle. Because honestly, it's your response rather than what I say that's important. It doesn't really matter what I say. I could honestly keep talking forever and you'll get more and more frustrated and miss lunch. Your response is what's important. So take a moment with those questions. What breaks your heart? Where does change need to come? How do you embrace risk? And who's with you on the journey? 2 minutes on your own. For the extroverts, that's on your own. I know. That's what social media was invented for. For extroverts in moments of silence. 2 minutes. Sorry, as an extrovert, I'll keep talking through your 2 minutes of silence. Can you tell? That was at least 30 seconds of silence right there.
I feel better already.
2 minutes. I will be quiet. You will be quiet. Social contract. Just reflect on those four questions. What is your response today to what God might be stirring in you? And what I'd love you to do is just going to give you the opportunity to just talk to somebody else. You, as Synergy, are at a significant moment. And you've had various prophetic words about new and hope, singing last night that the Lord fights our battles. The Japanese word for crisis has two characters. One character signifies danger. The other signifies opportunity. You're at a stage and a season. The church itself is at a stage where there is both danger and opportunity. There's both great challenge and great potential. They're both true. One word held in two characters. Two realities held in one moment. And the leadership team will have a response, and this is what God's saying, this is what I think we should do. But actually, it's your response in this moment. What is your response to what God is stirring in you? That's what's most significant. So I'd love you just to turn to the person next to you. You may know them, you may not. I'd love you to share as much as you feel able to the depth. And I'd like you just to share your one or two key reflections from those questions. And then I'd love you just to pray for each other. Again, just verbalizing, this is what God's stirring in me. This is my frustration, my hope, my vision, what breaks my heart. I'm isolated, I need to work out community. I'm too comfortable, I need to step into faith. What is it? What are the one or two key reflections for you? Share them, and then just pray for each other. So, go for it. Turn to the person next to you. What are your key reflections? And pray for each other. Okay, let me just rudely interrupt. But it is for good cause. We are heading towards lunch. Worth being interrupted for. I would love just the privilege to pray for you. So I'd love to pray for you, then I'm going to hand over to these guys. And I've written down my prayer, which I don't usually do, but I was just reflecting on what I would desire to pray for you and over you. And they were just various different words. And so I wrote them down rather than miss one or two of them. Because I, as I say, I know some of you guys, but I love being with you. There's a joining, there's a heart, there's a friendship and a family. I feel like a sort of adopted kind of into the family, kind of grafted into this wonderful eclectic mix of missional leaders. So hear my heart. This is what I would pray and hope for you as a family. Lord, I pray for my brothers and sisters. Lord, I pray that they would be disciples and they would be leaders who are prayerful, who are compassionate, who are adventurous, who are servant-hearted, who are resilient, who are communal, who are healthy, who are generous, who are faithful and full of faith. Lord, thank you that your promise to this family is that you can do immeasurably more than they could ever, ever, ever ask, imagine, dream up, cast vision for, organize around, get done. Lord, you are bigger than the box of their imagination and their organization. Lord, I pray for my brothers and sisters, a Jesus movement, a Jesus people who are moved, a Jesus people who are moving, and a Jesus movement. Inside and out, your kingdom come, and your will be done, Lord. Amen.